Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 41 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. Sorry, this one is a little late. I was meant to record this earlier in the month of April, but my expected guest couldn't then make it. And then a friend of mine died and I had, unfortunately, a funeral to go to. So good excuses, I'm sure you'll agree. But April, never quite emergible. I'm recording this on the 30th of April. So it's just about squidged in. But by the time you hear it, it'll be May. But May's fine. May's a great month. And I'm back and raring to go. And this month's interview is with US lesfic author T.B. Markinson. And you'll be very pleased you stuck around for it. It's a great interview with her. But of course, it's coming up after my intro, where we're going to take a look at what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as looking at what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me, of Claire Lydon. So first up, let's look at what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts. And riding high in the charts in the UK is Harper Bliss, with book 8 in her Pink Bean series, and this one is called Crazy for You. Now, I haven't read it, but Crazy for You and Borderline are my absolute all-time favourite Madonna songs, so I love this book already. You know, who doesn't love a bit of Crazy for You? I remember I used to dance to it when I was a teenager and, you know, do that thing where you put your hands sort of on your shoulders and pretend somebody's dancing with you. I'm not sure who I had in mind at that point. Probably Madonna, maybe. Yeah. If you've been a fan of the Pink Bean series, I reckon chances are you're going to love this one. And if you're not, I'm assured you can read this one as a standalone book. So get into the Pink Bean series with Crazy for You. Just as an aside, Harper Bliss and myself have just sent our co-written romance to our editor, and I can say from working with her, she's a terrific writer, so get on it. Top of the charts in the US is the one and only J.A. Armstrong, pumping out another volume in her first course series of books, this one called Perfect Pairing. J.A.'s books are short and sweet, and this is another slice of life with Devon Brine and Carrie Maynard. So if you haven't got onto that one, I'm assured that there's much drama in it. Also burning up the charts is Natasha West with her most recent book, By Any Other Name. This one is about Lane and Casey, whose families hate each other, but whose daughters fall madly in love with each other. And they're prepared to risk it all, the wrath of their families and everything that comes with it, for love. So in a nutshell, this one is a take on Romeo and Juliet, but with lesbians. Hooray! Who doesn't love that? I loved Natasha's The Plus One. She was on this podcast quite a while ago. Have a look back and see. You can listen to her on it. But if you like British rom-coms, I'd say give this one a go. Meanwhile, H.L. Logan's new yarn features a protagonist called Claire, even spelt the right way, the same as me. Now, is it my imagination, or are there more and more leads called Claire these days? Is my name finally coming back into fashion? Because if it is, well, whoever would have thought that? You know, it was very in fashion when I was at school. I was one of 5 Claires in my class. So in fashion or common, you decide. But, you know, there's more and more Claires these days, so I'm all for it. I can never name a lead in my book Claire, because then everyone would think it was me, and my family and friends already think all my protagonists are me. So that would just encourage them a little more, wouldn't it? There's not much to say about this one. I haven't read it, but the reviews are split as to whether it's fabulous or mediocre. So I'll leave you to decide. It's got a very 80s cover, sticking with the Madonna retro Crazy For You theme. Finally, also doing well in the charts in this fair month of, May as it will be, is Magnolia Robbins with her new book, Wild Sky. This is about Grace and Shiloh, who meet in a small town in rural Canada. Assumedly it's got a wild sky. One lives there, the other is returning home after a mental breakdown. So there's, you know, it's a bit deep, this one. The reviews are proclaiming it touching, and many readers these days are after books with a bit more sort of depth than serious issues. So if this is what you're after, it could be your bag. Check it out. And that is the chart roundup for April the 30th, 2018, as I record this. But as I said, by the time this comes out, it will be May. That's what happens, you know, months. They just go sequentially every year. Sometimes I think, are they going to surprise us? But no, April always follows May. And you know how I know this? Because I've just done a year's accounts. Every year I say, I'm going to do my accounts at the end of every month. And then I don't. And when will I learn? I'm not sure. Answers on a postcard. But this year, it took me three goes. It took me about 12 hours. It was a long time. I did speed up after a while, but it's just getting all the bits and pieces together. So I just done a year's account. So I know that April follows May because I was able to stop at April and not leave it for another year for sure. So before I get on to my personal update, let's have a look at what's going on in the world of Lesvic, and that is mainly to talk about awards, because awards season is nearly upon us. And I think I talked about the Lambda Literary Awards last time, and this time there's a couple of big awards that have announced their shortlists. So if you want to go over to these sites and vote for the books you want, you can. First up is the Diva magazine. Diva Awards have announced their six-person shortlist for Author of the Year as part of their Night of Glittering Awards coming up in June. It's not just a literary festival that's going on again next year, but this year, you know, there's Best Musician, Best TV Actor, Best Community Person, all that sort of thing. But the six up for Best Author are Kiki Archer, Jade Winters, Stella Duffy, Christine Burns, Val McDermott and Veronica Fearon. So congratulations to all of those. And if you want to vote for your favourite out of the six, head on over to www.divaawards.co.uk and you can do so there. Also in April, the nominations were announced for the GCLS, the Golden Crown Literary Association, which is like the lesbian Golden Gongs, I suppose, the lesbian Oscars of the literary world. And there's plenty of former podcast guests in with a shout in numerous categories. Is it just me, or are the categories getting bigger and bigger every year? There seem to be more this year, and more people nominated, and more possible winners. So I can't possibly list them all. If you want to check out the full list of nominations, because there are more than 100 people nominated, it's getting a bit like the Grammys. So head on over to www.goldencrown.org for a full list. But favourites of mine on the list and former podcast guests include EJ Noyes for Ask Tell, one of my favourite authors, G. Benson, for Who'd Have Thought, Georgia Beers for Frankly All the Books, Andrea Bramall for Rock and a Hard Place, Carrie Hunter for A Quiet Death, and Wendy Hudson for Mind to Keep. So well done to all of them, well done to everybody who's nominated, and good luck in those awards, which will be doled out in a glittering ceremony in Las Vegas this year. The location changes every year, but the GCLS conference this year is in Vegas from July the 4th to July the 8th, and I think if you want to go, you can still go. There's tickets and all that at the goldencrown.org website. Super. So what have I been up to since we last spoke? Well, quite a lot, actually. I've had a very, very busy sort of end of February, and the whole of March was flat out bonkers. But book four in my London romance series, The London of Us, I completed that at the end of March. So it's now done in ebook and print. I did the print book in April. And now we're just waiting for the audio book to complete. And that's being recorded, I think, next week or the week after. So that should be with you. I can't release it until I get back from holiday because I'm buggering off to Canada and America for first 3 weeks of June. So when I'm back, it's going to be released on June 27th, Pinky Swear Promise. I know you've been very, very patient. You've been waiting for this one. But the exciting news is it's going to come out in ebook, print and audiobook all at the same time. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about getting it out into the world and into your hands finally, because it's had a very long gestation period, this one, seems like I finished, you know, the first draft in like January. So, but I'm already working on the next book in the London series. I'm loath to say last, because at the moment it is, but who knows, never say never. This one's going to be called London Actually, and that comes out, doesn't come out anytime soon, but I'm starting work on it this week. Also in April, why I was banana bonkers busy is because I was co-writing a romance with none other than Harper Bliss. And that got sent to the editor last week. So whoop for that. I can reveal the title is Once Upon a Princess, and we hope to release it the week after the royal wedding, just in case you need another shot of royal romance after Harry and Meghan have done the real thing. But I can tell you writing the fictional lesbian thing was a blast, and Harper was a dream to work with, frankly. And I know we were both trepidatious about co-writing with somebody else because we've never done it before, but actually we worked really well together, and we're both pretty pleased with the outcome. Some very, very early readers have had a sneak peek and they liked it, so let's hope the editor likes it too. And that is being released at the end of May, so a little sooner than my fourth book in the London series. In April, before that, I'm planning to release a box set of the first three London books in my London romance series, as well as getting grip on London 5. So it's all go before I jet off to Canada and Boston and Provincetown and Cape Cod, which is going to be a great trip, but lots to do before that. So that's the lot for this month. Now it's over to the interview with the brilliant T.B. Markinson. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today on the Lesbian Book Club is the lovely and wonderful US author T.B. Markinson, and in a break from tradition, because T.B. lives in back there, London, and we've met a couple of times and been for a beer together, isn't that right?
A few times.
Hung out at the London Book Fair and scared some people from Poland and Spain and France and
Latvia. Did we scare them?
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
Just because we're lesbians, is that the reason? Or did I do something American to scare people?
You started whooping like Americans do.
Yes.
Anyway, in a break from tradition, TB is here with me to record the podcast. So welcome, TB.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me to your home. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, I'm very pleased that you're here and that you're being American. It's very odd, isn't it? Have I mentioned that you're American? And and you're living in the UK with your equally American partner.
I know.
And your equally American cat. So
yes.
How are you finding it living in the UK?
Oh, we love it. We moved here back in 2011, and originally when the plan was, when we moved, it was only supposed to be for 2 years, and then we were supposed to go back to the U.S.
Okay.
It took me 20 minutes in London to realize this is where I wanted to be. So when we got here, I immediately started talking to my partner and saying, is there a way we could possibly extend your contract? And luckily we ended up staying for 5 years. And then we left for a year and a half to go to Dublin, Ireland. And we recently returned to London, and it's good to be home.
Good, good. Well, we're very pleased to have you in London. And I'm sure there are a few other Americans you can talk American with when you miss home, right?
I'm not sure what American is, but I get that a lot here. Is there a certain way we talk?
You talk about brisket and things like that, and cowboys and.
Well, I did live in Colorado for a bit, so yeah, that is a fault, I guess.
And what's the other thing you talk? Well, I have a very off subject, but I have another American friend called Diana.
Scandalous.
Do you know her? And she gave me some stuff for my house the other day, and it was in a Trader Joe bag. Is that quite American?
It is. Mm. I didn't shop there very much because we didn't have it in my area, but it's kind of a posh American thing. It's kind of like Whole Foods, but a little, I think they have a little more panache to it.
That's the caliber of my friends, you see. posh American. So I'm hopefully now I've offended every American listening. So you find the house all right? That's the other question, because you know you live in West London and I'm in Greenwich in Southeast London, and probably, you know, it's difficult to get around London sometimes, but you found it all right.
I did, and I actually did not take the bus. I ended up walking here, and I followed the blue dot on my phone. I wouldn't have found it without the blue dot. I'm telling you right now. I would not have found it, but I can't even find my own home without a blue dot sometimes, so that's not a big deal.
It's good for blue dots, though. Yeah. And after this, I'm going to be taking TB on a tour of Greenwich. And we'd love to take you with us, listeners, but we can't. So anyway. So I normally ask people what they can see from where they're sitting when they're talking to me. But you're in my office. What can you see?
A lovely backyard. I'm seeing a lot of purple flower. Pink flowers. Apparently, I'm colorblind. Pink flowers out there, and
that's camellia for anybody who uses.
I'm not very good at identifying flowers, trees, or birds.
No, I'm not either. But I know that's camellia because I call it the suicide flower. Because well, as soon as it blooms, it just falls off to the ground.
That is depressing.
It is.
So all that work to grow, and then
it just
and that's just the fate.
Yeah. So. Anything else that you'd like to let the listeners know that you can see?
Well, I am noticing if we are going to do our pub crawl later, it's starting to get a little dark outside, so
I know.
It's getting a little worrisome.
It was meant to be blue sky and sunshine, and it's looking very dark and grey. We might be having a beer in the lounge, but, you know, that's all right. Anyway, so let's get on to your writing journey.
Of course.
Can you tell us a little bit how you got started on your writing career?
Fits and starts with my writing career, actually. I realized at an early age I wanted to be a writer. I was in the sixth grade. I don't know what the equivalent is here. Around 10 or 11 years old.
Okay, yeah.
We had a project. We had to write a short story about Christmas. You had to, like, make up a Christmas tradition and write a story about it. And so I decided to go all out for it. And I sat in front of our Christmas tree, and this is back in, 80s, it's around there. And the Christmas tree had bubble lights on it and everything, and so I sat there in the dark on a little stool in front of the Christmas tree and wrote out my story by hand. Okay. And turned it in and totally forgot about it afterwards. And then when the teacher graded it and handed it back, she wrote a little note at the top, said, "You should become a writer when you grow up."
Wow, that is amazing.
And
what a great teacher.
And she was a student teacher, and I cannot remember her name, and I feel so guilty about this because she literally started me on this path. And yeah. I would love to track her down and be like, you know, that was a great thing you did to give someone encouragement from the very beginning. And so ever since then, I was like, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe I should be a writer because I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I never considered it at that age where, like, maybe I just thought books magically appeared. I don't know. I never really considered the whole craft of it. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I started really wanting to be a writer. And then life happened. I went to college. I kept going to college. And then I collected a couple degrees. And I was doing some writing, but it was more like technical or newspaper articles and such like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved to London back in 2011, I quit my job. I was working at a university, and I quit my job. And we moved over here, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And my partner was like, well, you've always wanted to publish. Why don't you give it a go? Mm-hmm. And so she kind of gave me a deadline, which was a very nice deadline of 3 years, to write my book and get it edited and get it out on the market.
3 years. So how long did it take you?
Oh, I don't remember. I think it was under two, actually, because I've published A Woman Lost, which was the first book I published, back in July 2013.
Okay.
So I beat it a little bit, but yeah, when you first start writing, though, you don't know all the editing and how much of a commitment, mm-hmm. and when I first sent it out to the editor, I was kicked back, be like, yeah, let's do this again. So I was like, okay, and so I did. So I learned a lot. I think one of the best things to go through, especially early on, is to go through the editing. I mean, you really get into the nuts and bolts of things, and you really start figuring out how to tell a story and everything. That's the best education, at least for my mm-hmm. experience.
No, I agree. I think with my first couple of books, I didn't. I had a friend edit them, who happens to be an editor,
mm-hmm.
But hasn't done that many books. But she's pretty good at, like, all the grammar and stuff like that. But it wasn't till my third book that I actually sent it to a developmental editor.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I started to learn a lot.
Yeah.
So I agree.
I could never be an editor. The patience they have, and they just see everything from a whole different perspective, which is what you need, mm-hmm. honestly, but it is helpful. And I actually used to hate the editing process when I first started. Like, when I was expecting an email from my editor, I'd always, like, look at the computer screen through my cracks of my fingers, like, oh, no, is the email here telling me how horrible it is? And then now I love it. Mm-hmm. I love to bang out the first draft, get that painful process over with, send it off, get it to the betas and get it to the editor, and I love to dig in and fix it and make it become the story it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very good writing advice for anybody listening who wants to go through the pain barrier, everyone.
You do. It is painful at first draft.
And but I actually think that getting it out in 2 years and not three is pretty good, because I think my first book from start to finish took 5 years. So well done.
Well, I cheated a little bit because I had half of it written and had it tucked in the drawer. So I had to like pull it out and go through it again and such. But yeah. And it was kind of hard because I just moved to London and I just wanted to go explore London. So I had to kind of set a schedule for myself and not leave the house too much.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe one of your books to someone who's never read one?
I would describe it, I always describe it as contemporary fiction that's very centered on the actual process of living with people, either whether it be family or friends and the whole dynamic. I love to get into... see how characters interact with each other. Obviously I write lesbian, so there's always going to be a lesbian or two in there. But I don't really focus too much on that, or I haven't written too much about the coming out experience, except for my Girl Love Happens series. But yeah, I love the whole dynamic of human connectedness.
Okay. Human connectedness. I like that. So if you're into human connectedness, give one of TB's books a go. So you're best known for writing series of books with either the word woman or girl in the title.
Yes. So, I'm not sure how that happened, actually.
So I'm not sure what your next series is going to be. But your latest one is called The Miracle Before Girl,
yes.
Which is book two in the
Miracle Girl.
The Miracle Girl series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the latest book, because it's getting great reviews.
Thanks for that. The Fall Girl is the second book, as you said, and it follows JJ and Claire's story. JJ has recently started an online news site, kind of like HuffPo or something like that. And since it's a new adventure that she has with her business partner, it's struggling financially, as most news organizations are. And they had a background. They were running newspapers before, so they had their foot in the door for the media industry. Mm-hmm. So they're getting off the ground. And in book one kind of goes through where JJ, she returns home to Colorado after 20-something years and returns back to the woman that she fell in love with who broke her heart. And she hasn't really been back since. And her journey from getting her heart broken to going back to Colorado is a difficult one. She's an addict and had some terrible experiences. And at the end of The Miracle Girl, she is blackmailed. And so
She has a lot of drama in her life.
She does have a lot of drama. And she's like a tiny thing. She's only like 5'1". So she has a lot of drama for a tiny one. And so what she does is she ends up confessing her sins pretty much, and she writes the book called The Miracle Girl, her confessions. And so when book two starts, since they're struggling for cash, her business partner is trying to sell her story to movie producers and such, and they need an influx. And then someone from The Miracle Girl reappears, not the nice person. And
the
baddies always come back. Get rid of them. You just can't. And so and she's working on a project, and it involves the dark net and cyberbullying, and they're trying to hunt a serial killer in the dark net. So she starts doing this, and it's about the investigation a bit and the whole pitfalls of social media.
So it sounds very interesting. It's got quite a meaty plot then. Not your typical romance.
No, there's the romance. She's also planning her wedding, and they recently just adopted a baby. So she's also adjusting to, she's always was single. She didn't have children. And so now she's with a woman who already had a 7-year-old son, and they just adopted a baby. So she's also trying to balance the whole work-life balance,
mm-hmm.
and then protect her family from everything that's going on, because she kind of gets swept up into the whole madness.
There is a lot going on, a lot to unpack in that one. And how many more do you think are going to be in this series?
I'm plotting out the next one. I would say at least a few more.
A few more. That's a nice vague answer.
It is. Well, see, when I first started writing, like, A Woman Lost, which I'm now working on book 4, which is technically book 5 because the prequel is 0, which I don't know why Amazon makes you do it that way, but that's the way they do it. So I'm working on that. When I first wrote A Woman Lost, I never intended it to be a series, but the readers kind of requested it, and so I started delving more into Lizzie's head, the main character of A Woman Lost. And
mm-hmm. So that's your other series?
That's my other series.
That's the Woman series?
Yeah, the Woman Lost series. Yep.
And you have been writing, as you say, a lot of prequels. So that is just in answer to fans wanting to know a bit more about the
I get a lot of emails and such saying, you know, I want to know more about the characters. Because a lot of the books, like, I start them when they've already kind of know the person or they've already are together mm-hmm. and they want to know the whole falling in love bit.
Which is what every romance book is. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So I'm getting ready to release the prequel to the Confession series later this month, which it's May, right? Is it May?
It's May. It's May the 1st, everyone.
Happy May.
Okay, so another prequel on the cards.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and tell me a bit about the other one you're releasing at the moment is the Girl Love Happens series, which is a little bit more YA, is that right?
Well, they're 18, 19 years old, and they're just in university or college, what we say in
so
the US.
So maybe NA.
Yeah, new adult. Yeah, they're sexually active, so I hate to slap the YA label on anybody who's...
New adult.
Yeah, we're going to go new adult.
And it's subtitled G&T Lesbian Romance, which I was like, woohoo, Gin and Tonic Lesbian Romance, but no, it's Gemma and Tegan,
It actually is Gin and Tonic, too, it as is? Well, because the part of the story is... Since they're in college, they do a little bit of drinking, mm-hmm. and every Thursday night they get together for G&T Thursdays.
Okay.
And since their name is Gemma and Tegan, one of them comments, "You guys go together like a G&T."
Oh, I love it. Love it. Good.
So yeah, it's a bit of both. There's some gin in there. There's a lot of gin in there.
And no book can be a bad book with gin in it, right? I mean, it's set in the 1990s in Colorado, so. How much research did you have to do to make sure you had all the right clothes and all the right music and obviously no Facebook?
No Facebook, no text messages, no cell phones. And so I have to like reprogram my brain a bit when I'm like trying to, because there's a lot of drama because they're young and they're falling in love. And one of them's a bit of a drama queen. Tegan's a bit of a drama queen where I had a reviewer say she should be called Megan because it's always about her. And I was like, am I allowed to use a part of a negative review? Because that was classic. I would love to start having my characters call her Megan because she is a bit all about herself.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the part of the research is I went to college in Colorado in the 1990s.
Oh, wow. You just have to look back on all your photos and your
So, yeah, but I do have to I do a little research and make sure I'm naming the right clothing brands that were popular then, the right stores mm-hmm. that were popular, and have to have them use a phone with cords and everything in it. So, I have to, like, remind myself what it was like.
I, too, went to university in the 1990s. I know, I don't look old enough to...
I wouldn't have guessed that. You went to university last week.
That's right. TB's coming back next week. I went to university in the 90s, and I was just met up with a bunch of my university friends recently, and we were talking about how none of us had a mobile phone, and we had to call each other's hall... as residence blocks to get in touch with each other.
I know.
And if you were in the UK, Mr. Byright was a big male brand.
Never heard of it.
And probably Chelsea Girl was a big female brand.
Okay.
Possibly not. I probably used to shop at Top Man or something, or Top Girl.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. So good. And you've written this one in episodes, a bit like a TV show. But they are book length, is that right?
Yeah, originally the idea with that was I was going to release them like episode 1, 2, 3, and they were smaller. And I realized very quickly that wasn't the best way to do that. The readers wanted more right up front, and then I wasn't able to produce them fast enough to get them out because there are, since it is more like the TV kind of thing, there are more cliffhangers.
Okay.
And the first season ends on a really big cliffhanger. And then I found out a few weeks after that I wasn't going to be able to publish for a year. And I was like, uh-oh. And I was starting to panic. Luckily, I did not get slammed in reviews. And I appreciate my readers for hanging with me during that time.
Hanging with you on the cliffhanger.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Very good. Yes, yes. And so so that was the whole theory behind that. But then I realized that that wasn't the best format for my fans. And so I still keep the seasons 1, 2, and 3, but now I release the entire season at once.
Okay.
And right, I've been getting hit with a lot of questions when season 3 is coming out and...
When's season three coming out, TB?
I'm trying to carve out time to work on it.
Okay, but you've got a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of books on the go.
Yeah.
How many are you juggling at the moment?
Oh gosh, I don't even have a number right now. Since I wasn't able to publish during my time in Dublin due to work permit issues,
mm-hmm.
I was able to write a lot, and now I'm releasing, and now I'm kind of stuck in the slog of all the promotional part, which is very time consuming,
mm-hmm.
and finding time to and energy to write and promote all at the same time, and I'm editing all the stuff that I wrote this past year. So yeah, it's a bit overwhelming, but right now I have about 3 books in the pipeline that I'm juggling at the moment
that you've already written and you're trying to
various stages them. Of them are mostly written, and then I'm starting a new one now for a project that I've committed to publish with a group of authors, mm-hmm. for the holiday season, so right. I'm starting that. So yeah, I've been working hard.
You definitely have, and you need to, it's called finishing energy, and it's
what's finishing energy?
Yeah, that's finishing energy. Yeah. So, like, you have beginning energy is always like, woohoo, I'm starting a new book. And then you get to the end of the first draft, and then you have to do the second draft, and then the edits, and then you need the finishing energy to get it out.
I don't think a lot of people realize this, all the different stages involved. Because I get emails where, like, well, you just released this one, what's the next one? I was like, it's a whole process.
So let's talk about, you're also very active in the lesbian fiction community, and you've set up a website called iheartlesfic.com.
Yes.
And it's getting a lot of traffic. I know a lot of people have told me that they found my books via iheartlesfic.com.
That's great.
So that is great. So thank you very much for doing us all.
More than happy to help.
For doing authors a great service and readers a great service. So if people go to iheartlesfic.com, they can sign up for your newsletter, and then they'll get details of all the books being released that week. And they'll get interviews and...
interviews, guest posts, and I organize big sales every few months, pretty much. And so, yeah, the newsletter goes out every Tuesday, and it includes the new releases in books and audiobooks. I've added audiobooks recently because listeners were feeling a little left out, and I don't want anybody to feel left out.
We love an audiobook on this podcast.
I am a huge audiobook fan. I used to listen to audiobooks when they were on tape.
Back in the 1990s, yes. In Colorado.
Yes, and I had to get them from the library because they were kind of pricey.
Yeah. They're still kind of pricey, actually. But
yeah, I do the Audible where I get the membership.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, mm-hmm. Which is kind of bad because then I forget they actually cost money, and so I'm always like, oh, this has been my credit, and then I'm like, I'm out of credits.
And do you enjoy doing the iHeartLesbic? Because I take it is quite a lot of work to keep it all going and get everybody. Because I know just doing this podcast takes work, booking people in and doing it all.
Yeah, the research for the questions and everything like that. Yeah,
you do it every week. So
I do. I underestimated how much work it would be when I started iHeartLesbic. The reason I started it was... It dates back to my Dublin days when I had more free time during the day. I started reaching out to other authors. Since I wasn't able to publish, I was trying to keep my name out there and everything and still keep readers happy. So I started organizing joint sales with other lesbian authors, and you and Harper were the first ones to agree to do a joint sale with me. So thank you.
We were.
You're to blame for iHeartLesbian.
I'm to blame.
You and Harper. So I started organizing more of those sales because the readers really liked it. My fans really liked it.
Mm.
And it was fun to be able to connect readers to new books and everything. And so I needed a kind of a landing page for the sales. And I didn't want to use my author page because it wasn't just about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another blog. It's called the 50-year project, but that's more about my travels and such, and so that wasn't a good spot either. So I thought about it, and I was like, I remember when I first started publishing in 2013, there weren't a lot of sites that catered to lesbian fiction. And I was like, well, it kind of seems like we need to fill that space, and I'm organizing these sales, so that's how it came to be.
Mm. No, absolutely. I think it's great, as I say, great service for readers and writers, because I think the only one previously to that, I mean, the Lesbian Review does a great job with its podcast and, and its reviews.
The talk show,
And the Facebook group and everything like that.
Yeah.
And that's only sprung up in the last, since I've been publishing.
When did that spring up? I can't remember.
I don't know, but I would guess probably 2016 was when it really got going.
Okay.
I know that Sheena was doing it in the background, like, sort of for a while before it really took off, as with any of these things. But I think Women and Words was the only thing that I came across.
Another fabulous website.
Yeah, another fabulous website. Yeah. So, yeah, so it's great that you did it. And are you planning on doing any audiobooks, talking of audiobooks?
Well, funny that you mention it.
Funny.
I have one that should be released any day now.
See, I didn't even know that.
It's being quality checked right now by Audible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, The Chosen One is the first one that's coming out of the gate. And then I have a narrator who is also working on the Woman Lost series. Woman Lost will be the first one, book one. But she's going to do the prequel and everything up to what I have. And right now I'm in the final editing stages of book four of A Woman Lost.
Okay, so exciting. So quite a lot of audio stuff coming out. Because obviously podcast listeners love a bit of audio. So
Yeah. I meant to do it earlier, but I wasn't able to when I was in Dublin. So now that I'm back, I'm trying to get my backlist into audio. So right this year so far, I have 5 projects in the works in various stages.
Wow. Exciting times.
Yes.
And your next book that is coming out then, which series is that in?
That's going to be the Confessions series. It's going to be the prequel, Confessions from the Heart.
Okay. Right. And I've read Confessions from a Coffee Shop and it was terrific. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah, this is the story of how Corey and Kat fell in love.
Maybe I'll have to read it.
Well, I happen to know I can send you a copy.
perks of doing the podcast. So let's talk a little bit about your processes in writing. You are a full-time writer, as you said. So how do you find that? How do you manage your time? And do you find it? It's changed over the years?
Because yes.
You've been doing it since 2013.
Yes, it evolves quite a bit. I'm not sure why. Maybe I'm not very good with schedules. I don't know. Maybe that's why I work from home and do my own thing. But no, I try to get my writing done early in the day. I am trying to become more of a plotter, but right now I am not. But no, I'm trying to work on that so I can be more productive because I have a lot of fans who are anxiously awaiting different books.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of series going on. So
I happen to stumble into doing, I think I'm at 5 series right now.
Wow.
And so, which is great because it keeps my mind happy because I get to focus on different groups and everything. Mm-hmm. But I do get frustrated that I can't crank them out as fast because I know the readers are waiting. Mm-hmm. But I'm only one person.
Yeah. So and how do you feel you are in the stage of your writing now? Do you think you're chopping it all up into manageable bits at the moment?
Yeah, I'm learning now because each day I start my day and I list goals of what I want to accomplish that day. When I first started doing this, I was overly ambitious and would write out what I thought I needed to get done for the day, and I would just cram pack it, and then I wouldn't get through the list, like a third of it. And it was kind of daunting and it kind of made me feel bad. Mm. And so I realized I had to be more reasonable. And now I'm becoming, oddly enough, I'm setting fewer goals, but I'm becoming more productive.
Yeah, well, that's good though. If you can hit all your goals, then you feel better, right?
Yes, yeah. And it's nice to end the workday on a positive note, because when you go to the pub, you want to be happy.
We'll go to the pub soon, don't worry. You can be sure
you'll be happy. That was a little hint.
Yeah. And do you have a word count when you're writing?
I try to hit about 2,000 words a day. Sometimes I go over, and then there are days where it's literally not happening, mm-hmm. and I just have to realize it, call it quits, or I'll change up to a different series that's I think that's how I kind of got started on the series.
Okay.
Because sometimes you write yourself into a corner, and I'm a thinker. I have to let things mull over. I go for really long walks. I live close to Kensington Gardens. I throw on a headset, go walking, and I try and work my way out of the corner. Mm-hmm.
No, it was a good thing to change up your situation if you are. I go for walks as well around Greenwich Park. So lovely. And do you have any mantras you use in your writing process?
Mantras, like just put your butt in the seat and get it done.
Yeah.
That's my mantra.
Okay.
I mean, I'm one of those people where I just try. Because when you meet people in the pub and they find out you're a writer, they're always like, oh my gosh, that's like, I've always wanted to do that. It sounds so amazing. You only, like, well, you work like an hour a day and then you just drink the rest of the day because they think Hemingway when they think writer.
Yeah.
And I always try to tell people, no, it's a job. And don't get me wrong, I love it. I don't want to do anything else, but it's still a job and you still have to just sit down and do it. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the biggest things I learned. I read, what was it? Stephen King on writing?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the book?
Yeah.
And that's basically what he says is you set the time.
Mm-hmm.
He does it, 9 in the morning? You set the time, you sit down, you do it.
Yeah.
And you don't stop until you get it done.
Yeah. It's very true, actually. I was just thinking today that I think you know that me and Harper Bliss have been writing a joint book.
I'm excited to read that one.
And when we were doing that, I very much just sat down and wrote every single day because I knew that I had to.
Yeah.
Because then she had to write the next chapter. And then she had to do it. So it was motivational for both of us, actually. Because I know that Harper said a couple of times, there were a couple of days where she would have just sacked it off.
Yeah.
But because I was waiting for the chapter, she had to do it. And I haven't been quite as productive since we stopped.
Yeah.
So I should implement that in my own writing process.
I'm a firm believer in deadlines.
Mm,
nothing gets me motivated like the fear of missing a deadline.
Mm.
And so what I do is at the beginning of the year, I make appointments with my editors. And I set very firm dates. Well, I'm going to get this done by this date. I did recently miss my last editing deadline by 3 days, and I felt terrible about that. But yeah, that's another way I try to stay accountable is I make sure, because it's not nice to your editor because they're expecting the income.
Mm, no, absolutely. And they've got other things to do too.
They're overworked.
And what is your favorite thing about writing, and what is your least favorite thing about writing, would you say?
That's a good question. Just say it. my favorite thing about writing is I love to delve inside my characters' heads. I like to tinker with them and see how they tick. And so, yeah, I spend a lot of time, or they spend a lot of time living inside my head, and I like to get to know them. And the thing that I love about any project I start, I usually have an idea. I know I said I don't plot. I usually have a general idea of how I'm going to try and get from point A to B.
Mm-hmm.
And then, amazingly enough, the characters just take over. And I end up at, E. And I'd love to see how a story changes. It's almost magic, really.
Mm.
It's one of those things where you just sit down and somehow you create this story. And so I love that. My least favorite thing, that depends on the day and what stage I'm at in writing. Right now, I'm listening to, I'm proofreading. Proof listening to the audiobooks.
Oh, that's a bitch.
And it's hard to be like listening to your own words and such.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so right now that's my least favorite.
I find that difficult because you have to then just concentrate on that and you can't do anything else.
You can't fix it anymore. You can't be like, oh, I should have done this, or because it's set in stone now. It's in audio. So you're, and the thing is, I had a teacher once who said, a story is never done. There's only deadlines. Because things just keep evolving. And when I'm listening, I want to go back in and I want to tinker it a little bit more and such. Or I know now that, since I'm on book 3 of that, the arc that I didn't know then. So I want to be like, oh, I should have dropped this little hint. And then, you can't do it. So it's kind of painful.
Yeah. But, that's life. You have to move on. Move on. Don't look back.
Otherwise, you would never publish.
No.
If you just kept tinkering.
And final question. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
I love this question. But I'm going to have to choose Dorothy Parker an American writer who was popular in the 1920s and 30s during the speakeasy time. She lived in New York City, and she had quite a bit of snark.
Snark, that's a good word.
When I was in college, I was a history student, and I had to do a biographical study my senior year. And I went to Barnes & Noble, and I was wandering around. It had to be an American. And so I was wandering around the store, and I was like, I don't want to do George Washington or John Adams, right? I don't want to do what everyone else is going to do. So I ended up, and I picked up a biography on Dorothy Parker. And I didn't know who she was, and I started reading it, and I was just hooked on. I mean, she's like an ultimate drama queen and everything. And I admired her gumption and everything, so I studied her a lot, so I'm going to have to choose her. And then my other one is going to have to be Mark Twain.
Okay. All-American team?
Well, you told me to bring my Americanness, and I'm bringing the American A-game here. But no, I mean, he, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, has written one of the finest American novels, Huckleberry Finn. And my poor partner, she's not a big history person. And I have dragged her to Hartford, Connecticut to see Mark Twain's house. I don't know how many times now. She's only done the tour once with me most of the time. And there's not a pub nearby, so she's just kind of stuck outside. But
that says love to me.
Yes, yes. Well, I do promise, because they have some great microbreweries in Hartford. And so I do promise after the Mark Twain bit, we go to the microbreweries and experience.
Now, not actually on Mark Twain, but is Connecticut near New York State?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So is
Massachusetts, New York. Yeah.
So is the Hartford you're talking about the same one that the Gilmore Girls' mother lives in?
I think so.
So there's my literary TV connection.
There you go. I think so. I didn't really watch the Gilmore Girls. And I know I should not admit this, especially on a podcast. I've seen a few episodes and I love it, but I was at a time in my life when it was on where I was busy.
You can watch it still. It's on Netflix.
I know.
It's like my favorite TV show ever.
So do you recommend watching this, like binging one weekend?
Do the whole 7 series. Well worth it.
And then they relaunched. So how'd that go?
They did. They relaunched. They had 7 series, and then they relaunched, and they did 4 1.5-hour sort of movie-like episodes. And I enjoyed all those as well. Yeah. That's 10 years on.
Did they have the same? Because from what I've heard about it, it's like the dialogue's very snappy.
Snappy.
And this
quick snappy. Yeah.
And the plot is tight and everything.
It's awesome. And female-led.
I'm a terrible person for not watching this.
And you know what? Both the lead characters, Lorelai and Rory Gilmore, and Emily Gilmore, actually, you know what they've all got? Snark and gumption. So you should get on it.
I'll take your advice.
And you should also watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime, because it's written by the same people that wrote The Gilmore Girls, and that has got snark and gumption too.
All right.
Anyway, well, this has been terrific, TB Markinson. Tell everybody where they can find out more about you.
You can visit my website, Lesbian Romances by TBM for TB Markinson, or you can stop by iHeartLesbic.com.
And sign up to the newsletter to get all the goodies about sales.
Absolutely.
And new releases and all that shizzle. Right, lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. I forgot to say in the intro, but if you're in the UK, also don't forget about ELCON, which is the brand new European Lesbic Literary Conference on the block, coming in August. I think it's August 23rd, 24th. For more on that, head over to the ELCON website, which is http://elconmeet.org. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the London Romance series, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, Twice in a Lifetime, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Barnes & Noble, Bella Books, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, on Facebook Claire.Lydon, and Instagram at ClaireFix, so come on down and follow me there. I've got to say I'm most active on Facebook and Instagram. Plus, if you'd like a free lesbian romance, sign up to my VIP Readers Club and I will send you one for free. To do that, just go to www.clairelydon.co.uk and just fill in your name in the box at the top of the page. Right, that's all for now. Join me next time when I'll be back with more hot book club action. See you then.